So this then goes on with our theme, well, not your theme, the theme that I've been preaching on this past week of building a spiritual foundation. So 2 days ago it was, the hard job of our youth is in fact building a foundation in our teens and 20s for the type of life that we will live. And then yesterday had to do with the nature of the choice and going back consistently on the choice that you've made, which is usually why when I do marriage prep, I teach the people who are getting married to memorize their wedding vows, to memorize them, so that they can make them a prayer in the morning and in the night when they go to bed. I, Bill, take you, Francine, to be my wife. I promise to be true to you in good times and in bad, in sickness and in health. I will love you and honor you all the days of my life. It's a great way of reminding ourselves not to go to bed angry, and then also to wake up and to realize what's important. Because, of course, if we don't remind ourselves of the foundations, the world can quickly make us forget what's important. And the first thing to usually take us away from our focus on God is the world. You know, the constant beating down of how's the house doing? How's the job doing? How is the friends doing? How well are we known? And it's really easy to take your wife or husband for granted when all that stuff keeps talking. And those vows are a way of saying, shut up, world. Let's focus on the foundations. Because if we are superficial, it is really easy to focus on the building and not on the foundation. And that is why when people focus on the superficials, when they fall, boy, do they fall. And they often suppose that the reason that they fell was because the wind hit their house tougher than other people. I've heard this too many times. If you knew how difficult my life was, Father, or whatever, then you would know why the whole thing fell apart. And maybe that's true. But when you look at, we do this in science, you do have a control test. You look at one that didn't fall, you look at one that did fall, and then you compare the evidence. Maybe the variable is not in the wind, but in the building. Same thing happens with priesthood. I'm picking on marriage for a little bit, but marriage and priesthood are very, very similar. And I can speak to priesthood from my own personal experience, and it's also much easier for you, because of course, if you ever you think, like, am I thinking, is Father David thinking of me or my family as an example? No, I usually think of people that live halfway across the world as an example so as to prevent this from happening, but now you can be sure. When I'm thinking or talking about the priesthood today, I am thinking about very specific examples, many of whom you are completely unaware of, thanks be to God. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will inherit the kingdom of heaven. And few people in their public lives have to spend more times saying, Lord, Lord, than a priest. And yet, it is so obvious that all of the different things that Jesus warns the crowds about today are things that priests are inevitably susceptible to. Casting out demons in their name, preaching the kingdom of God in Jesus' name, doing all of these works for the glory of God and for the salvation of people, and yet, do they even know him? And that's a profoundly difficult and scary question. Because we always need to really know that the measure of our connection with Christ is not how we feel. This is a huge, huge reality that we need to rediscover. It's not how we feel, but what we do. The measure of our prayer is not by how we feel when we're on our knees bent. It's not how we feel when we leave the church, or whether or not we feel uplifted or fed. Those are nice things. But do we gradually start doing things because Christ has commanded us to do it? Because when he says, be merciful, or blessed are the merciful, or forgive your enemies, pray for those who persecute you, if we work against our nature that wants vengeance, that wants our own way, that wants things to be just done in a particular fashion, then we know we are in fact doing the will of the Father. Not because it's our own will, but because it's his. And a priest needs to do this. And they need your help to do it. I'll just be really blunt and go out and say it. We need your help. And we need that kind of support that is hard to even express. That dramatic pause was not actually something I rehearsed. That was me really struggling to be able to find a way of expressing it. The real support that a priest needs is not to constantly tell him how awesome he is, which he may or may not be, so don't lie to him. What he really needs is for you to encourage him with the knowledge that you are growing in prayer, or you are deepening your relationship with Christ because of the witness that he is giving. Not because of how he makes you feel at the end of church. Have you come to a deeper and more profound knowledge of the will of the Father for you? Because in the end, like so many things, like all those different signs that we would be able to say are the signs of a good marriage, they can be a smokescreen. Happy kids, don't count on it being an infallible sign. We all know that sometimes happy kids are a smokescreen. The fact that they're publicly successful and publicly friendly, that doesn't mean anything. Sometimes when that divorce happens, it shatters an entire community. All of those different visible signs that we would be able to say, that's it, that's it, that's absolutely lovely. What would be the best sign in a marriage that it's truly strong is old age and sickness. Those are the ones I truly find edifying. So I will give you one example that is from my own family, but he will never find out I used him as an example, is my grandfather. I've always kind of believed that he's a decent man, except when I was a little kid and he tortured me by squeezing me between his legs, and he just seemed to like it just a little bit too much. So I was a little suspicious sometimes when I was a kid. You can't see if I'm doing the whole leg squeezing thing behind the ambo, but I am doing it. He would, you know, bug me, and he was a tough old man. And throughout my entire youth, he always just seemed like the guy, except for his ginger snaps, that was hard as nails. He made really good ginger snaps. The only Hogman that bakes. But then as Grandma got sick, he dropped everything. When she was committed to a hospital, and by this point, she had entirely lost her mind. It wasn't Alzheimer's, it wasn't dementia. It was some kind of degenerative brain condition that basically ate away at her brain, and it eventually killed her. She forgot who he was, she forgot everything about them, and she would often turn violent. Twice a day, he visited her. Twice a day. And he never gave up. But then eventually he did realize that his own human frailty meant that he couldn't take care of her the way he intended to. So even learning how to let her go, even in her life, was an act of penance. And so my family, some of them who don't practice the faith as much, when they saw it, they saw codependency. What they saw on the outside was that he didn't have any identity in and of himself and was totally dependent on her for his own sense of self and purpose. But then she passed away. And within a month, he bought an iPad. And that's really kind of strange. And when I went to visit him, I found it strange that there was an iPad on his kitchen table. And I didn't bother to mention it to him. And then my aunt said, you should ask him why he has an iPad. And I said, oh, that's his own business. Why should I care? She said, just ask him. Okay, Grandpa, why did you buy an iPad? Because Alice never let me. His wife never let him buy an iPad. She thought it was too expensive and too stupid. But now that she passed away and went to the Father, he not only bought an iPad, now he even has an iWatch. He's a funny old man. What I mean by this is this. He knows who he is. He knows what he should do. But he also knows who he is in relationship to God. independent of how the world sees him, independent even of how his wife sees him. And then it became clearer and clearer how much he chose to give himself up for her, not out of compulsion, but out of freedom. And when that compulsion was gone, of course, you saw the freedom. Priests can sometimes give away their lives because they're deathly afraid of God's judgment, or they're deathly afraid of being a bad boy, or all of these different things. When they need your support is to know that they are doing the will of the Father. Because what we want of them is eventually what we will see, what we would see in tomorrow's reading, but we won't, because it's the solemnity of John the Baptist. A leprous man comes up to Jesus and says, "Lord, if you choose, you can make me clean." Jesus stretched out his hand and touched the leper, saying, "I do choose, be made clean." Immediately his leprosy was cleansed. Then Jesus said to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded as a testimony to them." One of the danger signs, if we start treating marriage or the priesthood as some kind of reward, is that very gradually, we start wanting to withhold the benefits to other people, because we want people to see how much better we are than them. Right? "I've worked really hard for this. You shouldn't have it. You have to work as hard as I did to be able to earn the right to be able to be so blessed." Jesus has none of that. "I always choose to heal," he would say. The more we need to make that our heart in marriage and in the priesthood, the more God will be made visible in our church and in our community. God does not give us grace as a reward for being a good boy or a reward for being a good girl. He does it simply because he loves us. And the more we've embraced that freedom, the more we've embraced that joy, it's amazing how the world begins to see that your life, your faith, is a rock foundation that can withstand any storm, because such a love is its bedrock.